Andy, Michigan won the national championship by downing the University of Washington 34-13. You were there.
When I look back on all the events of my life, I've been lucky enough to marry a beautiful woman who's a great mother. I've had three wonderful children. In ranking where this falls under happiest moments of my life is still an incredible challenge.
I was going to say, be careful there.
Yeah, it's difficult. Let's just leave it at that. Depending on the day, the rankings are constantly changing.
Yeah, this is the game. Okay, Andy, tell me, how fun was that? That must have been such tremendous fun to be there and see that.
You know, it was remarkable. From takeoff to touchdown to all the pregame festivities. I mean, even if you were a Washington fan going to a game like the national championship, it's just such a spectacle. And I'm not a huge fan of Houston. For a city as large as it is, like, you know, you'd think it'd have a little bit more going for it. Hopefully there's no Houston listeners to the podcast. But watching two teams basically descend upon the city and their fans take over the city, and the 2 days as they're leading up to that, just being, you know, Michigan and Washington fans everywhere, and then the tailgate, and then the fanfare and the electricity at the stadium. And that was just the moments leading up to the game. I think it was exciting for everybody involved. And it was just People moved mountains to watch their teams, neither of which had the opportunity to, you know, be in a national championship game in some time. And so this was a big buildup. It's not like it was, you know, Alabama or Georgia going to the Natty again, or even Ohio State, who was there, you know, sometime in this millennium. These were two teams who have been waiting a long time. So the buildup was very palpable. And that's even before the game started. I was lucky enough to go with a friend who, although being a Washington Huskies fan, was not as rabid as a fan as I was. He went to Seattle University, which is a nearby school here, for undergrad and his graduate school. But when you don't go to a school with a sports program, you pick the closest school that has a dominant sports program, as many fans from Ohio who didn't go to the Ohio State know, that you just pick the team that's going to allow you to watch and root for the team. So he was a Washington fan, but he wasn't a diehard Washington fan. And so it worked out well that Michigan won, because he was able to handle a Huskies loss a lot better than I would have been able to handle a Michigan loss going there. The night before, we went out and kind of went about the town and hit up some bars and restaurants. And after some discussion with you and a Michigan fan and a couple other college football fans, I decided to wear my thank you for your service Connor Stallion shirt. And let me tell you, I was the belle of the ball. People were coming up to me asking me if I was wearing that shirt unironically, asking me what I really thought about the situation, taking their picture with me. And I get it. It was kind of a troll move, but it was just a good conversation starter and got people riled up. And, you know, some people thought it was funny. Some people got all heated about it. But it was a nice way to roll in that I don't think I would have gotten if I was just wearing my Blake Corum, you know, jersey, which is absolutely what I wore on game day. I didn't want to jinx anything. I didn't want to bring negative energy into the stadium. It was all just Michigan gear game day. We found a good tailgate full of very gracious Washington Huskies fans that my friend had some connection from high school, and we just ran into them at the outside the stadium and had a good time with them, had a couple beers, you know, was jawing with different fans, but it was all very cordial. Everybody was there to have a good time. And then we got to our seats, and for 3 hours, I was absolutely locked in. And unlike the Alabama game, where from the first play of the game in the Alabama game, where JJ threw the interception that just by an inch on the sideline got called back.
Almost threw that pick to Ohio State safety Caleb Downs.
Yeah. That was Caleb Downs, yeah, wasn't it?
It was.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even think about that. But the Alabama game felt like it was, we were going to blow it throughout the entire game until we didn't. From the moment of kickoff, and maybe this is just hindsight bias, but it felt like we had the game in hand, and it was just going to take something apocalyptic for us to lose the game. I told my friend, when I saw J.J. McCarthy petting Herb Street's golden retriever on the 50-yard line before the game, which I'm surprised it didn't get any like media coverage or like tweets. I couldn't find anything aside from the picture that I took of it. I just thought that was such a zen moment. I'm like, oh man, we're locked in. We're going to win this. And it happened. It was, you know, hey, obviously I've watched the game a number of times afterwards, but from Donovan Edwards to miraculous runs where, yes, I'm going to credit it to him and not the fact that he got lucky bouncing off a completely crowded line in the middle and finding space. I mean, he got it to the outside and just burst for speed for the end zone. From those two touchdowns, it felt like it was going to be ours to win. And then a little doldrum in the second and third quarter, but our defense controlled Michael Penix. There was no run game with Washington. And then the maize and blue ticker tape came down. I made my friend stay in the stadium until we got kicked out. We watched the players and bring their family on the field. We watched, Harbaugh's sort of unrecognizably quirky speech about bring it down and whatnot, the interview. And he was gracious in defeat in a way that I'm not sure a hardcore Washington fan would have been had he had the shoe been on the other foot. And he told me that I needed to watch my team lose the national championship and then stay in the stadium for an hour after, where I could be finding solace at the bottom of a bottle back in the hotel room. I don't think I would have been as cool with that. Reggie, when we had to leave the stadium, the place was overrun with like booked Ubers and the trains were not running correctly. And NRG Stadium is one of those classic new NFL stadiums that is just, it has no soul. It is just a big concrete monolith, not even built in anywhere near downtown. So it's off in Levi Stadium zone, way outside the city. And getting to it was hard. Getting out of it was so difficult that my friend and I decided we were just going to walk in the general direction of our hotel, which was 7 miles away, mind you.
Oh, man.
And keep checking the Ubers until someone was willing to pick us up. Reggie, I had broken my ankle just 6 weeks before, and I was just freshly out of the boot. And under any other circumstance, I think my pain level would have been 11 yeah. out of 10 after walking 2 miles on it in the cold Houston night. But I could have been walking on air for all I cared, yeah, man. It was absolutely. It was a, I'm not a spiritual person, but it was a spiritual moment for me, and it's forever changed the paradigm on how I watch Michigan football, coming from somebody who started watching after we won our last national championship and someone who watched through the darkest years in Michigan football and remembered people asking, are we ever going to beat Ohio State again? Are we ever even going to be relevant in college football again? It will forever change how I'm able to enjoy my team. And I want to put on the record, if I ever feel so embittered about my team that I am not enjoying even the bad seasons, even the good parts of the bad seasons, I want to remember this moment and the joy that it brought me, because now I've tasted the bitter, as we said, from Vanilla Sky in the past, and the sweet definitely tasted sweeter than can imagine. And I'll be able to taste the bitter again and not be as bitter as I was.
Unless you're an Alabama fan, you have not won. Nobody else has won a bunch of these, right? Yeah, Alabama does it left and right. Six of them in the last, whatever, 17 years under Saban. The rest of us, I didn't get to see one in my lifetime till 2002, and it was the most spectacular thing. And then got to see it again in 2014. I'm hoping I get to see another one or two or more, but you never know, man. They're hard to win. It's so hard to win a natty. It provides so much entertainment, so much fun, so much bonding with your kids, so much camaraderie with other fans that if you only can enjoy the whole season, if you win a national championship, then your life is going to be empty most of the time.
Absolutely. But it's different being on the other side of a national championship season in a way that I didn't understand before. I could enjoy Michigan football in a sense that it felt like when we would have a really good year and then lose to Ohio State and then perform admirably in a bowl game, that was as much as I could expect from my team. But having just a season like this to remember, I'm obviously Ohio State fans have had a couple or many, depending on how far back your memory goes. And Michigan fans from the before times, before I was a fan, had something to rely on. It changes you. It changes sort of the way you're able to look back. I will always be able to look back on this season and be like, oh, yeah, you know, remember 2023. It was, you know, a great and miraculous season. And that will buoy my spirits through what is, you know, sure to be down seasons and times when we not only do we not perform up to the expectations of fans, but we perform below everybody's expectations. And that's, for the first time, is going to seem more okay than ever. And I just don't want it to feel like a mullet, like giving next season a mulligan if it turns out really bad. I want to feel this way in 3 years, in 5 years, in 7 years. And you're right. It provides so much. There's so much more than just winning. The games are marked at the end of the week. It's what gets us through our shifts in the emergency department, right? It's what we plan our days around. We get together with our kids. You know, my oldest son is finally, you know, watching the games in their entirety and understanding enough of the game to get really excited about it. And now I've got in the next 13 years or 10 years before he leaves for college to enjoy all these games with them, and all the time, you know, communicating with him and my other children during those times about the game. It's just so much bigger. But I was ready. There was just a sense of, is Michigan ever able to field an elite team that can go all the way again? And now it feels possible. And yeah, it's super hard to win a national championship, but now it always feels like the right combination of players and coaches and development and opponents can lead to that chemistry that can get you there. And it's just a completely different feeling.
And hopefully it'll never happen again in my lifetime. But if it does, you know, you just, like I said, you gotta relish the times that when things are good. After surviving the John Cooper era for 20 years of dominating, I never took one of those wins for granted, ever. Like, I enjoyed every one of them, because you know at some point the worm will turn, which it has for the last 3 years now for Ohio State. Now you're like, well, man, are we ever going to beat them again? We are.
And careful, Michigan fans. I mean, this is arguably the greatest run of Michigan football ever, and certainly in the modern era.
I don't think it's arguable. You can't compare 1900 well, that's why I said, to 1910. Well, that's
how I said, you know? Arguably ever, yeah. And then definitely in the modern era. But it can't get better. I mean, we've summited the mountain, right? Yeah. It can't get better than this. And do I want it to happen again? Of course I do. Do I want to beat Ohio State for a fourth time again? Of course I do. Careful with your expectations, because nothing can go perfectly forever. And if it does, then I'm really going to start questioning whether I'm in the Matrix or yeah, right. I've decided to splice false memories a la Vanilla Sky into you know, something in my life that's gone horribly wrong, and I decide to live in a cryogenically frozen state with fake Michigan memories, because it just doesn't happen like that unless you're Alabama. And guess what? It's not going to happen like that for Alabama anymore either, because Nick Saban, the glue that really held that program together and drove its dominance, is gone. Is Alabama going to be great? Yes, of course they're going to be great. They're still going to recruit well, but they're going to recruit well in a big new expanded SEC and under different circumstances of college football and NIL, and you're just not going to see a run like that. So Alabama fans need to start easing themselves into what is good about college football, and it's so much more than winning it all.
I think how many national championships did Alabama win between Bear Bryant and Nick Saban? I think one that I can remember.
Oh, without the two of them?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that, yes, Alabama fans are in for a rude awakening.
Right.
Bama's done. And Nick Saban's departure, obviously, is one of the biggest, probably the biggest coaching change of the offseason.
And speaking of Vanilla Sky, everything seemed to have come at a perfect time, Reggie. We had the pandemic, and it was very hard to be an emergency physician. And there were people at the time, Michigan coming off of the 2-4 season, wanting to fire Harbaugh. And it just felt like we were at a new low again. You know, it was back into Rich Rodriguez and Brady Hoke era. And maybe that's when they started. I joked with you that I died during COVID and that they spliced in the false memories, or that I'm intubated somewhere and they spliced in the false memories. But even this year, man, I mean, winter in Seattle is hard at baseline. There's not a lot of sunshine. It rains for like 5 months straight. We usually lose to Ohio State, and then I have to just like hunker down. But on top of that, you know, I broke my ankle in October, which turned me into some weird, like, Jimmy Stewart Rear Window-esque character where I was just getting secluded and weird. My dog died in December. It just felt spiritually just so needed to have it happen the way it did, beating Alabama and sending off Nick Saban and then winning the national championship. I know that, like, you're a good man for having to, like, sit across the table and listen to a Michigan fan talk about this, and it's admirable that an Ohio State fan puts up with this, because if at the beginning of the podcast, if you were to put table stakes on which one of our teams was going to win a national championship first, I would have bet Ohio State.
I would have too.
And put major odds on it. And I suffered through years where, like, I couldn't even imagine the idea of Michigan beating Ohio State, let alone winning the Big Ten, let alone winning a national championship.
If we bet right now on who's going to win one next, I'd bet Ohio State.
Yeah, I'll reserve judgment because I just don't want to harsh my vibe right now. But, you know, Ohio State's going to return a great team next year, and Michigan's got a lot of gaps to fill and a lot of questions to answer. So certainly, statistically, I think Michigan's in for a course correction, but how could you not be from 15-0?
Anything other than another national championship is a course correction to some extent.
Right.
But, you know, like you said, expectations will be high, and we'll talk about that in our preseason podcast. But I'm not going into 2024 with the expectation that if Ohio State doesn't win the national championship, I can't enjoy the season, and the season's a bust. Like you said, the perspective you get over time of, you know what it feels like to win one. Most years, you know what it's like not to win one. But like 2021, for example, we lost the Oregon game that year. That was a little disappointing. Then we lose to Michigan for the first time in a decade. That was really disappointing. But none of that removed the enjoyment that I had of watching us in that Rose Bowl. It's still one of my favorite games. That was so much fun. I enjoyed that thoroughly, watching C.J. Stroud and Jackson Smith and Jigba light up the Rose Bowl, even though the defense let Utah light it up too. I didn't enjoy watching the defense, but watching Pro Bowler C.J. Stroud throwing the ball to Jackson Smith and Jigba was massively entertaining. I love that game.
That's what made the game so fun, is that both offenses were electric. And as much as it maybe doesn't make for, you know, a championship winning football team. It's hard to win on just straight offense alone. It's a lot more exciting when you're a fan of the winning team, or you are, you know, a objective fan coming in to watch just teams score on each other back and forth. I think of the greatest college football game that I didn't have a vested interest in is probably Oklahoma Boise State in the 2004 Fiesta Bowl. I want to say that had like Boise State was not favored by like 3 touchdowns, and they came in and they played their hearts out and went into triple overtime. There were fake plays. There was the hook and the lateral play at the very end. The quarterback proposed to his girlfriend on the field. I mean, it was just the whole thing, start to finish, was like super magical. And it was a high scoring, you know, game where both teams were just taking body blow
thoroughly
after body blow. And I just like, I the memory of that game will never leave me, similar to like a Vince Young versus USC national championship game. Was just like, man, that was like, these are two just offenses operating at like high caliber, just scoring on, you know, two other great teams. Those are the really exciting games. But I just wonder, because we are so affected by others in this era of being so interconnected, I have to hear the thoughts of some random jabroni Michigan fan that doesn't even have, you know, a professional title, but they have a Twitter account, or, you know, they're able to post on a message board, so all of a sudden their thoughts are in front of my eyes. I don't want to become what the Red Sox or the Cubs have become. You know, they were cursed teams. The Cubs were lovable losers, man. Their song was "Someday We'll Go All the Way." And there was like a bonding, a fellowship in that, kind of in just being like the, hey, we're going to do it, and we're going to, you know, we're going to summit the mountain, or we're going to die trying, to quote my former coach, Jim Harbaugh. That, like, it feels so spiritual. And then all of a sudden you get over that hump and it's like, oh man, we missed the playoffs. Oh man, we didn't win it all in a year where we were supposed to. It's like, no, man. It's like, it was the harmony that comes with the lack of expectations in your team, or the lack of, I guess, supreme expectation, is what I'm super scared about losing.
We should probably talk a little bit about the game itself, that even though we're doing this season ending podcast in early March, and everybody obviously saw the game. It's been a while, but you mentioned that it never felt like Michigan was going to lose that game. And I kind of agree. They really dominated. They ran for 303 yards on 38 attempts, 8 yards a carry on 38 attempts. And that was the difference. The defense held Washington to 301 yards. They picked Michael Penix twice. And while they only sacked him once, he was taking some shots at the end of the game. Dude could barely walk at the end. As we had discussed before that game, Michigan's defense was the number one defense in college football this year. Defense wins championships. That's why they won the game. That and a very timely holding call when it was 20-13 in the fourth quarter and Washington hits a big play.
Their
game could have tied the game in the fourth quarter, and it gets called back on. Andy, I'm going to have to explain this to you as a Michigan fan. There is a penalty called offensive holding. You wouldn't have seen it as a Michigan fan. It's never called, multiple screenshots of blatant holding by Michigan's offensive line throughout the season. Never been called. Probably, my guess is I know they were the least penalized team in college football. My guess is they were probably called for offensive holding by a lineman twice, maybe this year. But anyway, I digress.
Before you conspiracy nuts fully don your tinfoil hats, think about what would have done better for ratings for the third. When that happened, like in the third quarter, I believe.
Fourth quarter.
Yeah. What would have kept more eyeballs on the screen for a longer period of time and more people watching the ads that were peppered in between? Would it have been Michigan salting it away and going up, what, 3 touchdowns? Or would it have been the Huskies getting back into it and, you know, maybe making a last, an end of game push to tie it up or to win it? So, yeah, you know, Michigan got a, I wouldn't call it a bewildering holding penalty. I mean, it was definitely holding. It's just
it was not nearly as blatant as the Michigan holds that were not called.
I would say, yes, it was definitely holding, and sometimes holding gets called and sometimes holding doesn't get called. But before we put this on one ref show play, let me tell you why Michigan won the game. Blake Corum, 21 carries, 134 yards, 2 touchdowns, longest run, 59 Absolutely. Yards. Donovan Edwards, only 6 carries, but for 104 yards and 2 touchdowns. And J.J. McCarthy, 0 interceptions.
Yep.
There were no turnovers. We played mistake-free, and our defense put pressure on Michael Penix Jr. so he could not be the sharpshooter that he was for the entire season. That's why Michigan won. And that's why I felt confident going in that Michigan was going to win. Ben yeah. and Herb Street's Golden Retriever.
Well, I do not think even if Washington had tied the score on that drive, it felt like Michigan was going to win that game. Like I said, that their run game was dominant again. J.J. McCarthy, as he's done most of his Michigan career, 10 for 18, 140 yards. Nothing spectacular about it at all, except he didn't turn the ball over. And that's, you know, Penix threw 2 picks and J.J. didn't turn the ball over. And he handed the ball off well. And Donovan Edwards, who seemed like he had taken a huge step back in 2023, he went from being kind of a sensation as a freshman to really hadn't done anything of note in the whole season. And now he's all of a sudden he rips off these 2 huge runs where, like you said, it looked like he might have been bottled up. And then all of a sudden he's running free.
Well, it's so funny. It's like Donovan Edwards just waits until the highlight reels are going to be the absolute hottest for his career before he decides to like make the greatest plays. Like, yeah, he was not impressive the entire season. But then, you know, you think of Donovan Edwards, what like his career, and we don't know what he's going to do next year. But if he went to the draft this year, and you say, close your eyes and think of 4 Donovan Edwards plays, I could think of the 4 immediately. You know, it's going to be the 2 touchdown runs against Ohio State and the 2 touchdown runs in the national championship. And those in and of itself, like, cement him in Michigan lore, Absolutely. Even though the man needs to work on his consistency and I think his vision a little bit. I think he got lucky running into, you know, Michigan players that were bottled up in the front and then, you know, it was supremely athletic and finding where to escape to. The other reason for Michigan's victory was Samaj Morgan decided to hold on to the ball for all the punts and not charge up and try to make a play because the Alabama Samaj Morgan was a little bit questionable, but that Samaj Morgan did not show up. But we didn't ask nearly as much of him during the national championship game. Samaj is going to be a great player for Michigan. He's got a super bright future. He's going to create some highlights for himself for sure next year. But I think putting a true freshman in those playoff games was just asking a little bit too much.
Michigan dominated the game in the end. I mean, certainly by the end, it looked like they had completely done, right? A 21-point win. They went, once they went up 2 touchdowns toward the end, you knew they were going to win. And then, of course, Mike Sanra still has another timely pick and almost runs it back. I think he had an 81-yard return.
Yeah.
Left him just short and then, you know, let Corum run it in as they've let him do all year.
It's funny. That was the first time I took my eyes off the field during an active play to celebrate with the fans around me. And I didn't actually see where he got tackled after the interception. That was sort of the, you know, the cake topper. Basically, that was sealed the game, and I knew, and so it was just high fives and hugs with everyone around me, which is weird in mixed company, right? Like, rarely as football fans do we get to go and watch a game with one opposing fan to your right and then a couple friendly fans to your left. I don't know, maybe Ohio State's right. Come and done that at Michigan when they've taken over the big house in droves, but usually speaking, it's you've got your people and the other team's people are everywhere else. It was kind of weird to have to go over a few Washington Husky fans to high five the Michigan fans and like hug them and celebrate. But that was the first time it clearly was out of reach for Washington. And I could take my laser beam focus off the game and celebrate. Yeah, it was a 81-yard return and almost to the house.
So as I mentioned before, the national championship game, I'm happy for you, Andy. I'm happy that you got to celebrate that. I am not happy for Michigan at all. It was hard to watch the confetti coming down and Harbaugh giving another cocky, just completely arrogant, entitled speech after the game, defiant as always. I couldn't have wished for anything more than Michigan to lose that game, but I'm happy for you.
It's like once you get a personal...
And my few Michigan friends. Yeah.
It's like once you get a personal connection with somebody, the regional jingoism that we all harbor towards our rival is just a little bit harder to cast such a wide net over. I would be happy for you if Ohio State won a national championship game in the near future. And then miserable for me and, you know, the rest of every Michigan football fan. Obviously, our views on Harbaugh are cast in the rivalry and, you know, what light. And I see him as sort of a quirky, on the spectrum, you know, coaching genius who doesn't know how to communicate well with people and also doesn't know what he wants out of his own life. And you see him as some arrogant jerk who deflects and is not open to criticism and is cagey and super weird. But I didn't...
I'm right.
He seems like... I don't know. I was there for the victory speech. It seems like he was just giving credit to the
You're
players.
You're so innocent. And You're the so cult. Innocent. We deserve this.
I don't see... they are only known as... national championship.
Oh no, they're not, Andy. As we will discuss.
Oh, geez, this again. Hey, bring it down. Whatever that means, bring it down. I will not miss Jim Hart. I mean, mission accomplished. He got us to the mountaintop, and for that, I wish him nothing but well wishes and whatever he needs to be satisfied as a human being. And I don't know what that is. But I have no ill will towards Harbaugh, but I will not miss the weirdness and the odd takes and the lack of relatability as a young, relatively neurotypical person, for Harbaugh. I think it'll be nice to have a bit of a return to normalcy with, Sharon Moore, at least in the how you relate to your team, your players, and your fans sort of way.
Well, so that's a good question. Is the Harbaugh era is officially over?
Yep.
And now that we've had a couple months to reflect on the season, what is the lasting perspective of the Harbaugh era? He was there 9 years. He had 3 wins against Ohio State. And he won a natty, which I think changes the end result of how his tenure will be viewed, changes it completely. He did something his hero, Bo, could never do. And of course, I think there's also a special significance to it because of how it unfolded. 6 years of failure, never beating Ohio State in 6 years. Then he wins the Big Ten for the first time in year 7. I've mentioned this before, but the turnaround is really pretty amazing. Like you said, 2020 happens. He's 2-4. They don't win a home game for the first time in their history. And Michigan wants him gone, and they give him a haircut. You know, he comes back at half his pay or whatever it is with some incentives. And then all of a sudden he rattles off 3 Big Ten championships in a row, beats Ohio State 3 times in a row, and pretty good Ohio State teams. Not like he beat, you know, some of the bad Cooper teams from the late 80s, first couple of years of the 90s. He beat, you know, pretty solid Ohio State teams that were not that far off, like in 2022, for example. Ohio State was right there. They make a field goal against Georgia, they might have been national champs that year. Michigan beat that team. They beat them this year, although I would say the greatest team in Michigan history, beat the worst Ohio State team in a decade by 6 at home, but they still won.
whatever gets you out of bed in the morning, man.
but winning the natty, obviously, if you told me 9 years ago when he was hired, we've talked about this, I was nervous, like, oh, wow. You know, he obviously had come from having success in the NFL, almost winning a Super Bowl, going to, what, 3 straight NFC Championship games, having the vision to start Colin Kaepernick, and seemed like, you know, he's a pretty good coach. Now he's coming back. He's obviously with the Michigan history that he had. So if you'd told me then Harbaugh will beat Ohio State 3 times in 9 years, I'd have been like, oh, that's pretty good. I'll take that.
Right. But
then he wins a natty, which they hadn't done since Lloyd Carr, which before that they hadn't done since 1948. So he wins their second national championship in 75 years. It does change the calculus a little bit on how the overall Harbaugh era will be viewed.
So I think the time I chose the Vanilla Sky company, folks, and you got to go watch this movie if you're going to get the reference, but also because Tom Cruise is a great actor and he makes every mediocre movie fantastic, and it's a fun movie to watch. The time I chose for them to splice in happy fake memories with the brutal reality of life was halftime during the 2020 Rutgers game when we were losing to Rutgers.
Right.
And I swear, if we lost that game, it would have been a Lane Kiffin moment for Harbaugh, would have been left on the tarmac, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you lose to Rutgers in one of the few games that you could win during that miserable season, and we eked it out through the heroics of Cade McNamara and a missed overtime field goal by Rutgers. It just, and then everything beyond that point just feels really just wow. And I remember watching Washington at Michigan at the beginning of 2021 season, ready for a route, because I watched the 2020 season. And I'm just like, man, you know, like, why do we even give Harbaugh a haircut? You know, he should have been gone. Yes, the receipts are there. I'm on the podcast saying Harbaugh should go. So I'm not going to try to pretend like I didn't say that. But then, like, we mollywopped him. You know, we crushed him. And then, you know, 2021 was a great season that was nearly perfect, aside from, you know, a generational talent at Michigan State. We conquered Ohio State in this, you know, bucolic snowy setting with Ohio State having an elite quarterback and us just having a game manager and Aiden Hutchinson. And then we went to the Shoot, and we are going to look at the Harbaugh era with a bit of revisionist history. Nobody's going to remember. I would say Michigan fans are not going to remember, and probably the general public is less likely to remember the struggling years of Harbaugh. You know, they're going to have a hard time remembering 2016 or the revenge tour or these years where, like, we had a lot of talent, we had a lot of potential.
I'll remember them.
I know you will have to. You will need to remember them. You will need to remember them to get by each day. But I think the Harbaugh era will be looked on at history by sort of the finally getting Michigan over the hump by beating Ohio State, winning Big Ten championships, and then going and winning the national championship. And make no doubts that if we lost to Washington, Harbaugh was still going. He was still going to the NFL. That was still
absolutely.
And so it could have been a lot more bittersweet. We could have been saying, well, you know, we beat Ohio State and, like, you know, we could have been Washington, right? Washington, you know, lost their coach, their team got raided, and now they're going to have to reset, and it's going to be a long rebuilding period. There's still going to be some rebuilding for Michigan, but we won a national championship, and then, you know, our coach went to the NFL. And I think that's going, when people say Harbaugh era at Michigan, there's going to be a lot more 2023 confetti pictures than there are going to be, you know, him watching who scored the winning touchdown and the JT was short. It wasn't JT.
Yeah.
Was it JT who scored the winning touchdown? And his whole, like,
Curtis Samuel.
That's
in
it.
2016.
Yeah, ran across the... There's going to be a lot less of that to the national public and obviously to Michigan fans as far as the Harbaugh era. So it's a success, you know. Statistically, maybe not. But statistically, J.J. McCarthy's not a top 10 quarterback either, but he's going to go maybe top 10 in the draft. So it's a bigger picture. It's about accomplishing the mission, and the mission's accomplished, or business is finished.
Yeah, that win changes, like you said, the whole perspective of the Harbaugh era. If they had lost the national championship and you're like, yeah, you know, Harbaugh won 3 Big Ten championships in 9 years. He didn't win it 6 times. He lost to Ohio State. And you know, Ohio State owned that era more than Michigan did. But he won a natty in his 9 years. Ohio State has not won a natty in those 9 years, even though we've had more overall success. That's not what will be remembered. But here's the beauty of it, Andy, because there's something for everybody in this season as we wrap the season.
We made it 35 minutes into the podcast. That's got to be a record, man. Oh, wait, no, I mentioned Connor Stallions first. That's right, my T-shirt.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
It's part of the thing, right? Michigan fans embraced and celebrated the cheating. And I think part of how the Harbaugh era is looked at in the history will probably be determined 5 years from now when the NCAA decides what they're going to do about it. Part of that will depend. If there's any justice in the world, Michigan will be vacating the entire 2021 and 22 seasons, right? Ohio State vacated the 2010 season, again, for players trading their own personal property that they own. Could you imagine that in today with the NIL deals and everything? Yeah. Money throwing around. Ohio State's players traded their own memorabilia for tattoos, and they vacated the entire season, which was also a pretty good season.
You're clearly still a little rustled over that, Rich.
I am about equal application
of
the law.
You want justice. I want justice.
I want justice, and if there's justice, then yeah, Michigan's intent to cheat in every game they played this year will not go unpunished. But as we've talked about before, they're not going to vacate the national championship, right? I think I said this on a previous podcast as well. Instead of death threats that the unhinged Michigan fan sent to Day and his family and his brother's family, they should send gift baskets, because if that had not come out, because, you know, the conspiracy theory among Michigan fans is that Ryan Day's brother is who blew the lid off the Connor Stallions thing. Think if they hadn't, then this natty would be vacated one day. But now it won't, because 7 games in, they determined it. They hadn't played anybody yet. And then they went through a pretty tough gauntlet, I would say, of 4 good teams. I'm not counting Iowa in that mix. Sorry. Like, I can't do
They're
it.
They're like half a good team.
They're half a good team. They went through 5 decent defenses and 4 decent offenses. The rest of the world was clued in on what Ohio State has known for years, that Michigan is just like everybody else, willing to do anything to win at all costs and break the rules and forget all the other scandals Michigan's had. Think of their last 12 months of their football program. Their offensive coordinator is still under FBI investigation for computer access crimes, whatever
I'm still super interested in that story. Are we ever going to figure out, like, did he just, like, look up, like, a recruit's information? Yeah. Or was he pulling files for Russia? Like,
I don't know what it is. Yeah. We'll see one day, maybe. Anyway, they've had a heck of a year when you consider the totality of the picture, and combined with the scandal and Harbaugh leaving as a national champion who is likely to have a show cause and not be able to coach Michigan next year anyway, after 3 years of begging the NFL for a job. And then when you win a natty, you finally, I guess, have enough cred that found somebody to take him as a coach. And I mean,
man, spin control is hard on this one, man. Yeah, I guess there is something for everyone. And yes, I guess I got to say that it's fortunate that whoever decided to leak the Connor Stallions story thought that halfway through the season was the opportune time. Because right. If they just held on to that data just, you know, 4 months longer, it would have blown everything to smithereens. Yep. Because it, maybe, like,
Could you imagine?
I don't even know if they're going to do that, you know, take away the 2021-2022 season. They might. But, I mean, if they did it after the national championship... Oh. Yeah. Oh my gosh, it would have been unbelievable. So thank you to, I don't know, Ryan Day's brother or Josh Gaddis or anyone.
Yeah, that's true.
The usual suspects too.
Yeah, now Gaddis enters the picture.
Who has an axe to grind? I don't know, man. I would say Josh Gaddis is, you know, a former Michigan man. He'd never do that. But his Twitter presence, getting into the mud with a bunch of, you know, anonymous Michigan fans, like, you are a college football offensive coordinator and you're responding to anonymous people on the internet, dude. Get a grip, like, get off Twitter and, like, go hang out with your family or something.
Yeah. Well, Gattis has shown he is a Michigan man because what this season has shown is that the term is meaningless. It has no meaning or value whatsoever. It's from Michigan man and Harbaugh fanboy Santa Ono, and it's just the way Michigan handled the whole thing. You know, you've been accused of cheating rather than taking any responsibility. You just run around saying bet.
It's bringing everyone together, said the clueless old white man. You can't throw after having Gordon Gee be your president, you cannot throw shade at Santa Ono. That's the one, like, you still have the more fanboy.
Santa Ono's in year one. Let's wait and see when he's been there. Michigan's last president was fired under scandal, like their volleyball coach and their hockey coach. And, you know, the key at Michigan to succeed is you have to be a Michigan legend. If you're Juwan Howard, you can beat as many people as you want, strike people, things that wouldn't be tolerated in any other workplace. But if you're a Michigan man who was like the only member of the Fab Five who was allowed on campus for a while, you're good to go, man. You're set. It doesn't matter if you've got the worst team in the Big Ten for the first time in 60 years for Michigan.
As a fan of the heel in professional wrestling, I always liked the bad people. I always liked New World Order. I always liked Ric Flair better. You know, I was never a Hulk Hogan, eat your vegetables and take your vitamins and say your prayers guy. I liked the bad guy. And coming in on the backslide of the Michigan, dominance with the expectations that we were going to always win, I never had a Michigan man sort of mythos baked into my head. And that's because the Michigan man stuff, as you have educated me, was more of a, 1990s, 1980s, 1970s, sort of narrative. And I just wanted to win, and I still want to win. And that's why the Connor Stallion shirt was so apropos for the day before the national championship game, because people couldn't figure out, is he really happy that Connor sounds? Is this a joke? Is it? It's the heel move to do, man. It's what you do. You're like, oh yeah, Connor Stallion's got us here. Am I being serious? Am I being not? Of course I'm not being serious. Connor Stallion's did not get us to the national championship game.
Well, you've also got the fact that the coach was suspended for half the season.
It is pretty amazing that Michigan went perfect this season while facing all that adversity.
No, well, like I said, two things are true. Michigan had the best college football team in 2023. I do not dispute that. The reality is Michigan won the national championship this year because they got players to buy into coming back for one more run after, two disappointing playoff finishes. They paid and convinced people to come back for their one more year run. They had a good coaching staff. They've developed players well. They have sent a record 18 players to the NFL Combine. And they were able to turn the controversy and the scandal into something that coalesced the team with their bet and all their stupidity, but it worked for them.
So
it combined to have a heck of a run, to a national championship that hasn't happened for a long time.
So, boomer lesson, anybody who's under the age of 30 knew what bet means long before J.J. McCarthy and then started saying it, and Harbaugh just had to add his own wacky spin on it by calling it bringing everyone together, which was just cute vintage Harbaugh. And I say this because Harbaugh won a national championship, and had Harbaugh underperformed at Michigan, I would have been like, this guy can't win, screw him, get me Matt Campbell or whoever's new. But that's not what happened, and so he goes out a hero and a legend and a Michigan man.
He definitely goes out of Michigan, man.
I know. He's, I think, epitome. We're both nodding, being like, yep, he's a Michigan man.
He's the epitome of a Michigan man. He is the ultimate Michigan man.
Oh, man. Winning makes everything easier, Reggie. I just like all these conversations and the scandal and us being the heel. It's so much easier to swallow on the heels of a perfect season.
But now they've got their new Michigan man, Sharon Moore. I assume he might be allowed to coach next year, even though he obviously was probably involved in the cheating scandal more than Harbaugh was. I think Harbaugh leaving also probably diminishes what the NCAA is going to feel the need to go after. Like, look, the guy was suspended for half the season and he's gone. And now all of a sudden, unlike in 2010, after Ohio State's scandal, we don't want to punish players that weren't even involved in it. We can't hold future players accountable for that. So there probably won't be any, you know, I think it's probably mostly done with.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of a postseason ban, I guess, isn't completely off the table, but I think it's less likely to happen than it is. And you're right. NCAA is public enemy number one ever since he started doing things that really, you know, exposed how meaningless that institution is, like doing the satellite camps and everything else. And, you know, basically flaunting the ridiculous nature of that organization. Yeah, he's gone. So they really don't have anybody to go after. I think that there will be some slap on the wrist. I think best Ohio State fans can hope for is a vacated 2021-2022. And
I say this as an Ohio State fan, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter, man.
Like, do I care? Do I enjoy the 2010 crushing of Michigan less because it was vacated later?
Of course not. No, you remember.
I know Ohio State lost at Michigan in 2021, and I know they got crushed at home in 2022. And
yeah, changing the record, putting a big blank square there is not gonna
Although it could be fun to watch Michigan make a second run at 1,000 wins.
I should get a t-shirt, 1,000 wins again.
They're the first team to win 2,000 games.
Unfortunately, they're by the time Michigan would have hit that milestone. I guess if they took two seasons off the books, so we could hit that milestone again.
A couple years.
Oh, I'm getting a t-shirt. That's right up there with my Connor Stallions. It's going to say 1,000 wins for the second time. Right. Yeah, it's going to be great.
I don't doubt it.
Where's my t-shirt printer?
I'm sure it'll be celebrated again. As we wrap the 2023 season, we should mention other momentous news. Well, so first of all, rules changes. Michigan has finally pushed the game forward to where there will be...
Revolutionizing the sport.
Sounds like there will be helmet comms for the 2024 season. So they probably will call it the Michigan rule or the Harbaugh rule or maybe the Stallions rule or whatever. On an objective level of what we do for a living in the emergency room, the fact that so many teams put so much effort and have to put so much effort into making their three signs that people are holding on the sideline and coming up with different hand signals and it's so childish and ridiculous that I'll be glad to see it mostly go away or become less relevant.
It does seem a little odd that this is a vestige of the 21st century of college football when, you know, instant communications available all over the place. I had to watch an entire year of a commercial where a deaf quarterback got his signal calls into a little, like, eyepiece in front of his helmet. In an industry that's worth billions of dollars, maybe they should have adopted something like that. But the sign making, the sign creating, the sign decoding, the sign changing versus sign stealing, spy versus spy, that was college football, I mean, long before Connor Stallions, was a cottage industry. I mean, teams had code breakers. You know, they were constantly changing it up. They were deciding when to change. They were having to think of how much pressure this is going to take off the players when they're like, I don't have to look over and see Daffy Duck, a Roman numeral number 3 and a plus sign and know what play to call anymore. Just someone's going to come over their speaker and be like, yo, run this play. And they're going to be like, got it.
You know,
it's going to be so much better for the players too.
It'll be better. So so that's a step forward. Other momentous news. Well, you know, one would be Harbaugh going off to the NFL, which we've discussed, and Nick Saban retiring. What Nick Saban has done as a college football coach is unparalleled. In this era of college football, which I think is by far the most competitive, the very best era of college football that has ever been, the best players, the best, the highest skill levels, the best coaching as the game has evolved. And for him to dominate this game the way he has is just unbelievable.
It's something to add to the mythos of the season that we got to be Nick Saban's very last game and his last loss. And I think the mark of a good leader is when to recognize that the times are starting to move away from him. And how he how he analyzed that loss and seeing that his players did not lose as graciously as he had tried to teach his players before, and how he mentioned a lot of his conversations with newer players or incoming players were more around how much field time am I going to get and how much are you going to pay me, made him realize that his era was ending. And that is such a classy and mature and unbelievable way to recognize when your time making an impact in any industry is over. And he still was getting his players to play at the top of their level. He still, you know, won a extremely competitive SEC and went to the Rose Bowl and almost went to the national championship. But he realized that it wasn't going to be the way he wanted to do it, and it was time for him to step aside.
To put a cap on the 2023 season, congratulations, Andy. Michigan did it. I mean, that's really quite a ride they had all the way to a national championship.
It was wild, and I just, again, cannot fathom, especially the way it seems written when we lost to Georgia and JJ and Andrel Anthony and Donovan Edwards are watching the Georgia players celebrate. And then we lost to TCU, and there's that iconic picture of JJ standing with his hands behind his back, holding his helmet, watching the purple ticker tape come down, and him giving the post-game presser after that saying, we'll be back to actually do it. I feel like odds are, you talk a lot of big game and then you don't make it. It actually happened. And I'm going to be questioning reality for quite a while until something seems a little bit more real as to what I'm used to. But it was a fantastic season, and I miss it already. It is my come down television show that I watch, where I used to watch a episode of a comforting sitcom that I was very familiar with, whether it be, you know, Seinfeld or any of the other ones. After a long shift, I watch a quarter of any one of the remarkable football games from the last 3 years, and I have nothing but thanks for those memories.
And even as a lowly Ohio State fan this season, the season was tremendously fun, from the Notre Dame last second victory to up till 11-0.
Yeah, remember
the Penn State game, taking my boys, that, you know, was a special moment for us. Didn't end as well as we'd liked between Michigan and then the awful bowl performance. But then, like the Phoenix out of the ashes, all of a sudden, if you'd talked to me the day after the bowl game against Missouri and how I was feeling about Ohio State's program, and today, I feel quite a bit better about hope. The future of Ohio State's program today than I did then.
Hope springs hope. Eternal.
Absolutely.
And maybe hope will spring eternal for Kyle McCord, who he was a legend. He was a legend after that Notre Dame game. He had guts. He had moxie. He led all the way down the field, end of the game drive. That, if you look at it at the end of the season, knowing that, in fact, Kyle McCord sucks. He sucks, and he's the reason he's we awful. Lost everything. Yeah. Oh, he wasn't that good during that drive. He almost threw a pick and ended it all. And you're just like, oh my gosh, to be a player for one of these programs is just brutal.
As a 20-year-old or 19-year-old.
My heart goes out to all of them. And yes, Dave Biddle, they're still kids. I don't care if you give them $1 million. If you gave my 12-year-old $5 million because he could open packages on YouTube better than anybody else. Right. Guess what? He's still a kid. His brain's still forming. Yeah. So I don't care if you give Kyle McCord $1 or $20 million. They're still kids. They're still figuring life out. They should still be somewhat protected from the harsh criticism of a bunch of jabronis on the internet who probably couldn't throw a ball 5 yards down the field.
By the way, thank you to all of you who play this game that we love so much, who have provided such incredible entertainment. I'm sure McCord now looks at Jeremiah Smith and they shored up the offensive line. Yeah. They got Quinshon Judkins, and he's probably like, what did I do?
Yeah.
We all make decisions in life that some of them don't work out.
He wouldn't have been starting for them next year anyways.
I don't know. I think he would have.
Really?
Yeah. Why would he have not had the advantage going in of being the starter again if they're going 11-1 as a starter?
I don't know, because of the one. Because that seems
foolish. That seems, not saying it couldn't have happened, but Devin Brown couldn't beat him out last year. They wouldn't have Will Howard, which I don't even know if Will Howard's going to beat out Devin Brown. But anyway, we're getting into our 2024 season preview. Until then, go Bucks.
Go Blue.